This week in the markets, gold and silver remain strong, while U.S. equities ran to an 8-week winning close. Well, welcome back to Gold Seeker Radio, everyone. Your host, Chris Waltzik, here. Season 14, episode 683. Bob Hoy, editor and chief investment strategist of chartsandmarkets.com, joins the show. Must hear commentary. He likes the precious metals, at least into March. And he also likes U.S. equities. We discuss a unique geological phenomenon that might just cause the Earth and its inhabitants a little bit of trouble in the next 25 to 30 years or so. So you might want to listen in and maybe even take notes. This is just my interpretation of a really clever scientist's research. Louis Navalier of Navalier & Associates returns with his key look at the economy. His Navalier Tactical ETF ranked number 2 in Morningstar's, and it's topped the list for 3 consecutive years. He uses spreads on ETFs and actually outlines them. It seems like he gives away some proprietary information. If you are an active investor and or just curious, maybe a money manager, I know we have a few, and hedge fund managers, definitely take notes on Louis Navalier's discussion. And here we go. I'm going to make an announcement today that I think is probably the most important on this show in going on 14 years. You may recall an interview with Ryan Walsh a few weeks ago, the individual working on receiving messages through very fast radio transmissions. Well, he and Anonymous CS have identified what I believe is the greatest breakthrough and discovery of all mankind. And I know it sounds like hyperbole, or maybe this guy needs to get some rest. Maybe it's a little of both. But in my opinion, I'd say, folks, there's a 95% chance that they have made a discovery that's going to change the world forever. And this individual is facing homelessness and worse. This is a Nikola Tesla story, maybe bigger. If you sign up this weekend to the Alpha Stocks newsletter, all of the proceeds for my newsletter or any donations will go directly to this individual, and you'll be earmarked if and when our Ash Alien Signal Hunters concept gets picked up by a hedge fund, which I frankly would not be surprised happens in the next few weeks to months. So thanks so much in advance. Again, I will reiterate, and you can take this with a ton of salt if you like. It's up to you. I believe Ryan and CS have made the greatest discovery. I also believe Arthur C. Clarke may have been privy to it. Stanley Kubrick, Steven Spielberg, and many people at the highest echelon of global society for 50 years. I believe it's, we just happen to be at the right place at the right time. And it's incredibly humbling to be in any way associated with this, even as just a footnote. Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest must-hear report. We'd like for you to call in to our toll-free hotline, 1-641-715-3900, followed by extension number 514049. You can address the question, if you'd like, to any of our guests, 641-715-3900. Please jot it down on a post-it pad or plug it right into your phone with mailbox number 514049. You can call 24/7. We'd love to hear your questions and comments. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with the market weather recap. Mostly sunny skies appeared over the precious metals sector this week, amid growing uncertainty at the Brexit drama, as well as negotiations between the U.S. president and China's president over the trade negotiations. At Friday's closing bell, all the precious metals indices finished near break-even, with the yellow metal up about $4, around $13.22. Silver also finished around break-even, off 12 cents at $15.74, while the XAU Precious Metals Index also ended near the break-even point, around $75.65.
did we get black gold?
56. Oh, you did. Black gold added 6%, finishing at $56, well off the $42 lows posted just a few weeks earlier. And amazingly, palladium closed at an all-time record high, 1,407, eclipsing the yellow metal, adding $36, ironically, just as we've been anticipating here on the show for months. Of course, everyone may know that it is the catalytic converter metal of choice, and frankly, I think palladium has an even more compelling rival, and that's platinum. It's $640, almost to the dollar, less in price, and as I understand it, just as useful as a catalytic converter substitute. Keep in mind, the supply-demand issues could be considerably different there, and it's likely the case because palladium was considered a precious metal for so long, it was likely the focus of many of the miners and their operations. Nonetheless, there you have it, just a thought for our hedge fund friends. And our favorite Alpha Stock newsletter gold share actually moved higher, topping the indices as well. The top story driving the metals market this week, gold finished at the highest point in about 2 weeks on news of some progress in talks in the final day of this week's U.S.-China trade negotiations. The week-long discussions between Beijing and Washington have been long. This is over the tariff dispute that wrapped up on Friday in China with reports of somewhat of a deadlock, but some wiggle room there as well. White House negotiators will meet with two White House negotiators met with Chinese President Xi Jinping on Friday, and at least currently there's no expectations of an extension of the deadline set for about 2 weeks from today on $200 billion of additional import tariffs on China. That's about a 15% increase if the two sides don't reach a deal. And I just would like to toss in here my 2 cents. I'm having prepared for an adjunct economics position, a local college here for several months. I can honestly say with absolutely little risk, I think, of error here that tariffs benefit either side very, very little, and the long-term impact can be disastrous. Really, a freer market is best up, but I do understand there are some inequalities that need to be addressed. I hope this is just saber rattling and this can be resolved without an increase in tariffs because of the potential risks, really more, I believe, to the United States than to their trade partner. The reverberations could be intense globally. And turning to the domestic economy this week, U.S. retail sales came in a little lower than expected. That increased economists' expectations of a recession as numbers around the developed world start to mirror that sluggish activity. In related news, the number of workers seeking unemployment benefits increased along with the inflation rate, as seen in the declining producer prices index in January. That suggests the U.S. Federal Reserve could shift from QT to a more dovish QE, beginning a new cycle of lower rates this year. Bottom line on the precious metals. Well, I keep echoing the message now from 2 weeks earlier. Mad Money's Jim Cramer said that gold, he's a believer, and he thinks we could see 1,400 or 1,500. Suggests everyone should have some in their portfolio. Well, I think our long-term listeners know we concur with Mr. Cramer. Plus, the technical position looks really solid here. Gold, silver, XAU. Really, we've seen in years, there's some solid momentum behind us. Moving on to Wall Street reports, sunny skies persisted over the markets, the major indices posting the 8th consecutive winning week in a row as investors continue to expect the Fed to curtail rates to boost economic growth, which translates into more jobs and spending and stronger corporate profits. On the New York Stock Exchange, by Friday's closing bell, the Dow was up 777 points, ending at 26,883, just shy of 26,000. Meanwhile, the S&P 500 picked up 67 at 2776, and the NASDAQ gained 67 at 7298. Elsewhere, the Brexit drama continues to unfold between the UK and EU, adding to demand for gold, as the Eurozone, of course, is home to an even larger populace than the United States now. And the setback increased concerns that the United Kingdom is on course to leave the European Union on March 29th without a deal. U.S. shares, bottom line. Well, the Greed to Fear Index at USA Today suggests the herd is getting somewhat more greedy here. From a technical position, we're certainly pushing pushing the envelope, as it were, and we might be due, of course, for a consolidation. I think that would be a healthy reaction, would be a solid thing here. For the time being, I'm still in the neutral camp, cautiously optimistic, and very impressed with the rebound from a rather steep decline from a few months ago. Blue skies ahead, let's hope. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek.
The blockchain revolution is transforming the global arena, disrupting every industry in its path. GoldSeek.com is excited to introduce an off-the-chain opportunity in digital gold and silver from our friends at Atmex and Sprott.com. OneGold holds physical gold and silver metals at the Royal Canadian Mint, the first online marketplace to offer secure and convenient buying, selling, and redemption of digital precious metals. OneGold uses VaultChain, a secure, immutable blockchain ledger developed by Tradewind Markets, the leading innovator in digital precious metals distributed ledger and blockchain technology. VaultChain. Gold and silver are 100% redeemable through OneGold for physical precious metals delivered to customers' doors in any size at competitive prices and low transaction storage costs. As a special offer and for a limited time only, OneGold is offering gold and silver at spot price with no additional premiums. OneGold.com is secure and accessible 24/7 on any device, offering convenient purchases and sales of precious metals. Easy recurring transactions make passive saving and gold dollar cost averaging as easy as a single mouse click. VaultChain offers the best tier pricing on Atmex products, setting the industry standard as a fully backed physical asset with easy redemption in coins, rounds, or bars, offering clients peace of mind and full transparency. Don't get left behind. Remember to bookmark OneGold.com for the safest and most convenient digital precious metals today. Remember, OneGold.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
It's just a big pleasure to welcome back, really a favorite here on GoldSeek.com radio for many years, formerly of Institutional Advisors. Now he runs a new website with his one of his colleagues there, Bob Clark, if I'm not mistaken. And it's just a pleasure to welcome him back to the show on another volatile week in the markets. Hello, Bob.
Good to be with you, Chris, and also good to be with our listeners. I really enjoy this, and especially in a world where such remarkable things are going on, I tell my colleagues and family that it is a privilege to be alive and alert in these kind of financial markets, and let's call it a market too, the political market is incredible. It's a popular uprising, as I've been calling it, that ended up with Trump as its executive. And the shock to the leftist establishment in all political parties has been immense. Trump sort of adds to it with, but I've pointed out that Reagan was a polite man who was trying to reintroduce the concept of limited government. And when nothing stuck, that's where they came up with the nickname, the Teflon President. And more recently, Chris, in Canada, with the former Prime Minister Harper, who for 10 years was Prime Minister, part of it as a minority government. But his drive was to reintroduce the concept of limited government. And, of course, the establishment hates that. And they worked him over 24 hours, 7 days a week. And he, Prime Minister Harper, was a polite man. So this is what you can see, that with President Trump, if he was a polite man, he would be getting the same attack, mainly because the political movement underneath, and this is very important to understand, is that this is a popular uprising, and it's similar to the popular uprising in the late 1980s when ordinary folk in East Germany took on communist dictatorships and shut them down. So I mention this, of course, to liberal acquaintances, and they just can't see the state of the bureaucracy now is sort of the American or the Canadian equivalent, and oh, definitely in England too, the equivalent of a communist authoritarians in Eastern Europe. And let's not overlook China. And the main difference is the ambition exists, but in the Western world, the governing classes have yet to grant themselves the privilege of state murder. But the intensity of the left in Europe today, in England, I did a paper recently, and it's looking at the financial markets and the political market, and in the past, on a strong bull market and a strong economy, it's the result of everybody getting busy. And unfortunately, the left and socialists get busy as well, and they get very strong and very strident, and they make advances. And then, for example, in the great commodity boom of 1920, the left accomplished the Russian Revolution in Russia, and in the United States, the left was nationalizing railroads and all sorts of silly things like that. And then, boom, with the crash in commodities in 1921, and also in economies everywhere, even centrally planned ones in Russia, it shifted from classical communism to some kind of a softer socialism as far as trying to determine the allocation of goods and services. And in the United States, they stopped nationalizing railroads. And then later in the bull market in 1928, John Moody wrote an article in Atlantic magazine, and he was extolling the wonders of that bull market and laid it the change from socialism in the United States to markets. And also in Europe, and this would open up much more retail trade. So the pattern was commodity boom, everybody socialist, and then it relaxed. And so I'm looking for a change in from where the state has been funding itself with through serial financial bubbles, because currency depreciation is state theft, and this is how they've been funding themselves, because you can only push the rate of taxation so far. And then the big bull market that climaxed in January a year ago, that was for the New York Stock Exchange Composite Index. It set its high. And then also the World Stock Index without the U.S. in it, it set its high then as well. And then also every great bubble in history has suffered a liquidity crisis in the fall of the year of its greatness, which then happened this time. So, and we were looking, by the way, that the liquidity problem in the fall could run as late as Christmas, which it did. The low was on December 24th. And then the rebound out until maybe into March, which we're getting. But there's still a probability that this could go into a severe post-bubble contraction. And then on the political side, Chris, this, then the public would look at the trillions of dollars that the central bank has expended in order to prevent bad things from happening. And with a contraction, they're going to say, hey, this is stupid. So the concept of the Federal Reserve System can lose its omniscience and omnipotence. And anyway, so then that's on the market side. Now, on the ambition where the government believes that it can set the temperature of the earth, that's an audacity usually that one would think would be attributed to gods. But anyways, there is in the real science side of climate, we're into a solar minimum, and for millions and millions of years, that's driven the climate either up or down. You get a very active sun, you got a warming climate, and as a matter of fact, the last 10,000 years is called the Holocene, which means the interglacial after the last glacial expansion.
I'm afraid you've unleashed the Tyrannosaurus Rex here. I, over the past few weeks, and have been studying this brilliant researcher who's also a geologist like yourself. And by the way, I took geology as a minor with psychology while majoring in economics. So because you can play out your hypotheses in real time on Earth, it's right there on terra firma in the strata.
Sure. The Earth is a book.
This brilliant geologist has come up with a theory about, well, 100 different things, from the subatomic to the Holocene period that you're referring to. His name is Douglas Vogt. I don't know, V-O-G-T. He's an American. 40 years ago, he crafted his theory. He's just one of these rare people like yourself and my late paternal figure who did nothing but read for the majority of their lives. You know, I mean, they had wonderful lives, full lives, but they had this unusual, like, 90% photographic memory where they really had almost total recall. He's one of them. The sun has a micronova every 12,000 years. Gleissman, there's a cycle. There's some blows its outer crust off the sun. First, the blast of light and energy, just for about an hour or two, whatever part of the earth that's facing it at the time, the atmosphere evaporates. That causes a massive vacuum. Now, what happens when you have a sudden vacuum in a giant space? It gets cold instantly. He claims is the explanation for the Arctic freeze that froze the woolly mammoths instantly, and they're still pulling them out and feeding them to dog sled teams in Siberia today, by the way, fully intact. Something even more astounding happens. Once this occurs, the fallout from the sun strikes the Earth a few hours later on the side of the Earth, about 12 hours later. It takes that long for the physical. So when it strikes the Earth, it causes melting, fills the atmosphere, as you might imagine, as a giant water vapor cloud. So what does it do? For about 10 years, it snows about a foot of snow a day. Your 3,000 to 6,000 foot ice packs over Vancouver and caused Lake Michigan and all the other Great Lakes.
I've not run into that one, but it's fascinating. We're looking for the rebound out to around March, where last year we had our indicators, Chris, which I, you remember, I called friends of the bull market, and they were likely to be positive out to about mid-year and then turn to adversity, which happened. So now we've got our friends of the rally, which would be industrial commodities such as crude and base metals, improving to around March. And then on the financial side, credit markets like the curve and spreads, favorable until around March. So we're on the markets, but probability that after mid-year, again, you could have some problems. The thing is, the stock market is very clever. On its bull market, it's discounting favorable things, and then it gets way excessive, which it did, and then it goes down, and then that begins to discount perhaps a contraction. But the bull market that did complete last year had a lot of the characteristics of the great classic bubbles in history, such as 1929 or 1873. Now, when I looked back on the bubbles of 2000, the dot-com, and then the 2007 bubble, they didn't quite have as many of the characteristics. So it's likely that history will continue, and after mid-year, we can look for a contraction. Now, one of the things that's missing with the violence of the change in the curve and spreads is that there would be some big people offside on that trade, and there's been no announcements of insolvencies or things like that. So maybe with the positive first quarter, they can keep their fingers crossed and things are going to stay together. But the changes in the financial markets are a sign that a post-bubble contraction is probable.
Before we wrap up here, would you mind giving folks an idea, though, maybe turn up the magnification, as it were, my fine fellow, over the precious metals sector?
Oh, we got to talk about that, because it's part of the feature. The characteristics are of a bubble is that the real price of gold is deflated by the consumer price index in the senior currency goes down with the bubble, and it has. I mean, the real big high was in 2011, and that was overbought, and then it's been coming down. So we can say that since 2017, the gold's real price is attempting to base. Now, the real thing is the next step is that with the contraction in everything else, gold's real price goes up, and that has to do with earnings. And when the real price is going down, it relates to earnings because the profitability in mining is not so good. And then when the real price goes up, it does reflect on profitability. So it'll enhance operations for miners, and it also will enhance the valuation for exploration properties. And being an old geophysicist and being in the game for so long, Chris, I've always got a time for exploration stories. So I think the way to play it is through the stock side. You get a better bang for your money out of being long gold stocks at the right time than being long gold itself. Gold is sort of a protection item. So the golds have had nice rallies. They're going to get some corrections in here, but maybe after mid-year we can then make the call that gold's real prices set the uptrend and that we're at the start of a cyclical bull market for the sector that, Chris, and get this, will become very speculative. It'll be fantastic. But that's ahead of us, and I think we can advise our clients on how to get there. So
brilliant. Well, you probably need to hop. Do you have a little more time to maybe put the magnifying glass over U.S. equities?
Yeah. Big stock market, good through March, and then we'll make another call on it, but likely in the early stages of a post-bubble contraction, in which case it would end up with a bear market for equities. One of the safe places for investors that we like is the 3 to 4 year term in good grade corporate bonds. And for investors outside of the U.S., such as in Canada, having U.S. corporates would be great because the probability is the U.S. dollar will be firm in a post-bubble contraction. So there is a practical place for safe money to go, and rather than just cash where the T-bill rate can go to zero, if you've got 3 to 4 year corporate, you've got these days a decent yield, and they won't kill you on price or risk. So there is a safe place to be.
And if you wouldn't mind, please tell people how they can find your website.
Oh, yeah, that's easier. I just set it up as bobhoye.com. So I'm just Bob Hoy, B-O-B-H-O-Y-E, and all the articles and how to get in there all comes up. It's impressive.
There's no hyperbole, I think, at all in noting we can't wait to hear your thoughts again in 2019.
Give us a call. Okay, Chris.
The blockchain revolution is transforming the global arena, disrupting every industry in its path. GoldSeek.com is excited to introduce an off-the-chain opportunity in digital gold and silver from our friends at Atmex and Sprott.com. One Gold holds physical gold and silver medals at the Royal Canadian Mint, the first online marketplace to offer secure and convenient buying, selling, and redemption of digital precious metals. One Gold uses Vault Chain, a secure, immutable blockchain ledger developed by TradeWind Markets, the leading innovator in digital precious metals, distributed ledger, and blockchain technology. Vault Chain. Gold and silver are 100% redeemable through One Gold for physical precious metals delivered to customers' doors in any size at competitive prices and low transaction storage costs. As a special offer and for a limited time only, One Gold is offering gold and silver at spot price with no additional premiums. OneGold.com is secure and accessible 24/7 on any device, offering convenient purchases and sales of precious metals. Easy recurring transactions make passive saving and gold dollar cost averaging as easy as a single mouse click. Vault Chain offers the best tier pricing on AppMex products, setting the industry standard as a fully backed physical asset with easy redemption in coins, rounds, or bars, offering clients peace of mind and full transparency. Don't get left behind. Remember to bookmark OneGold.com for the safest and most convenient digital precious metals today. Remember, OneGold.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Well, it's just a pleasure to welcome back Louis Nevalier, runs Nevalier & Associates, four leading stock advisory newsletters. Welcome back, Louis Nevalier.
Good to be here.
Great to have you. And, you know, you just put out an interesting news release this morning. U.S. shares are up 15% in just about six or so weeks. Solid performance. Tell us more.
Well, sure. The market's been reliquified, for lack of a better word. We started this year, the small caps have pretty much led the way. You know, we're in a strong dollar environment. We've had some big multinationals like a Caterpillar warn about the outlook going forward because, you know, half the S&P sales are outside of America, and when the dollar's strong, these multinationals are getting paid in eroding currencies. So there's a big push to be domestic, so that helps small mid-cap. Obviously, there's domestic large-cap stocks. You know, Home Depot's pretty domestic, so are healthcare companies, things like that. So a big multinational like Boeing is actually pretty immune from the currencies because the planes are sold in dollars. So as are the energy companies. So, you know, it's been a very, very impressive rebound. We think there was a glitch in the market in the fourth quarter, mostly related to ETFs, and they were being manipulated by our arbitrageurs, and then the spreads got wide, and there was a lot of problems with ETFs in the fourth quarter. So we think it was just more of a trading glitch that hurt the market, and so we've rebounded.
You don't then buy into the theses that we were really bumping up against the potential for a trade war that spooked investors, as well as the slamming on the brakes of the rate hike cycle. It seemed to imply that the Fed was telegraphing, you know, the domestic economy and global economy is not quite as solid as we thought. We're not going to risk higher rates against that type of economic environment.
First of all, that's a very good observation. When the Fed did raise rates in mid-December, market rates fell immediately. and have been falling ever since. And the reason market rates are falling, the Fed has since acknowledged this, is capital flight around the world. There are five major reserve currencies in the world. One is the Chinese yuan, which purposely devalued its currency to offset the tariffs, and that, of course, creates inflation in their country. The second is Japan, which is low interest rates. The third is Britain, which is dealing with Brexit. And the fourth is the European Union. And they got a problem. They got the Yellow Vest protests. They've got Italy's now in a recession. Germany's got some issues. And then finally, the Brits are leaving the European Union. They don't want to pay them. So the euro is actually weaker than the British pound. So when you look at all the reserve currencies in the world, everybody says, I think I'm going to go invest in a country that has the strongest GDP growth, a little higher rates, and, of course, a strong leader, and that's America. So this capital flight from around the world basically has shoved market rates lower. It's going to continue. It's also caused deflation. You know, we are now the biggest energy producer in the world, and we're bigger than Saudi and Russia. And we got another 1.1 million barrels a day we're going to add to production. They're taking natural gas pipelines and putting liners in them to convert them to crude oil. And so now we can tell countries like Venezuela, we don't want your oil anymore. So it's quite a fascinating environment we're in. I'm very, very excited about the outlook going forward. I deal with a lot of foreign investors.
The markets, as it translates economically, don't care for uncertainty. And when you have solid leadership, that eliminates at least one frequency, one band of uncertainty. All right, moving on. Some concern that we might see rate tightening cycle. That's what some of our latest guests here have pointed to. Plus, they're noting, Michael Pinto and others, Peter Schiff, that we could see a flattening or a continued flattening of the yield curve. How does this impact your models? Because I know that you manage bond funds.
Yeah, I have these tactical portfolios that go in and out of the market. You know, I'm invested in stocks now because I'm a stock picker, but I have a hard time with the broader indices and sectors. So in my sector ETFs, we're actually been out of the market since October, and we've been hiding in some treasury ETFs, 40% 1 to 3 year, and then 60% 7 to 10 year.
But look at what you've accomplished. I mean, the 1 to 3 year notes have skyrocketed.
Correct, because they thought the Fed would be raising rates, and they didn't realize the international forces were shoving yields down. We are looking to actually cover those Treasury ETF bets, but not till maybe March 29th. We think it's going to be a disaster. We think it's going to cause more capital flight to America. We think we might get a downward spike in yields after, just like when Brexit was announced, it shoved the 10-year Treasury to 1.36. I don't expect anything like that, but we are looking to cover that bet in and around Brexit on March 29th. Of course, everybody wants to delay Brexit now. It's just it's a disaster for not only Britain, but the European Union. So it's funny, you know, the European Union wanted Britain to leave because Britain was going to pay him to leave. And so Prime Minister May, you know, meets in Brussels, goes back, meets with the House of Commons, and they say, we're not paying to leave. It's very dysfunctional how it's all working. All I can tell you is the U.S. is the winner.
You know, that dysfunction obviously translates into function for your short-term treasury yield bets. Now, when you say bets, some of our guests, 60 to 90-day call on the SHY, which, of course, is, as you know, the short-term treasury ETF. Is that the instrument you chose?
Yeah, SHY, and then for 40%, and then the other 60%, I believe, is an IEY. I have to check the symbol on that, but the... But yeah, IEY is not an ETF, but it's iShares 7 to 10 year. That's the one I'm in.
Again, hat tip for that call because that matched Michael Pinto, who also uses an econometric model. I would like to get a feel for where Navalier and Associates sees this market on a forward basis. We saw the bears in unison. It was a chorus over, you know, that hiccup we had, or the chirp over the last few months before this big bounce recovery. You know, the end was nigh. It's 2008 all over again. Oh, no, it's the year 2000 bubble again.
But there was a small cadre of folks who said, not so fast. Armstrong was one, Michael Pinto, and a few others, and of course yourself. Do you care to go on record, stick the neck out a little here on a forward basis and give some guidance?
It's IEF is the treasury we're hanging out. SHY and IEF, that's where we're hiding. And those will be covered around March 29th. But as far as stock market's going forward, it's going to get more narrow because the year-over-year comparisons are very difficult. So we have totally different leadership now than we had last year. It's led by energy. It's led by retail, followed by healthcare and medical, and then followed by cloud computing and cybersecurity. So as this year goes on, the year-over-year comparisons are going to get increasingly difficult. We expect the market's going to get more narrow, more fundamentally focused. It's very fundamentally focused now. There's just going to be fewer leaders. So I think stock picking is absolutely crucial now. We love dividend growth still. Stocks that raise their dividends and buy their stock back. If there's anything that's been surprising about the market, it's just the magnitude of the buybacks. Last year, we had over $800 billion buybacks announced. I don't have the final figure yet, but it looks like it could approach almost $1 trillion. So one reason earnings keep going up more than everybody expects is the market. My average stock will be gone 17 years. The S&P will be gone in 27 years.
You know, this is another good point that some of our other guests have brought up. You know, in the past, I don't know, wasn't it 20, 30 years ago, it was outlawed. Today, it's viewed as really just common practice. And whether or not this is sustainable against the backdrop of more costly rates. In other words, when you have essentially free money for bonds, right, to issue, you know, you can issue bonds at incredibly low rates on a longer, especially longer yield basis, then you have this wiggle room to buy back virtually as much of your shares as you'd like on the market, and that seems to give sort of an artificial boost to the price. I'd like just maybe a quick overview of what your thoughts are on this, please.
Well, the European Central Bank is still doing quantitative easing. That's the Bank of Japan. So they print money, and we have U.S. multinationals go all the way to Europe and sell their debt, and then they take that cheap debt, usually like Apple sell 7-year notes in Germany at 90 basis points, and then they'll take that cheap money and buy their stock back. There's nothing you can do to stop it. We've stopped our money printing in America some time ago, but other central banks continue to do that. Europe, Japan are out of bullets. They cannot raise rates because they're too old. You know, it's an aging society. So societies get older, the yields tend to stay low. And it really does undermine the central bank strength. While we still in America raise interest rates to squelch inflation and strengthen our dollar, other currencies just print money. That allows U.S. multinationals to basically continue to access cheap money and buy their stock back.
What might even be more interesting is the Navalier model. Now, this may be proprietary. It may not be something that you wish to address. I like to sort of pick the brains of our guests who have a quantitative background. Is there anything about the model? Because you mentioned we're hiding out in treasuries and whatnot. Is this a certain percentage of the overall funds, for example? Or did you just say, hey, we're out of equities. We're moving into something a little more safe. I don't like the volatility. I don't like the risk profile.
This is our ETF management. Our stock management's 95% invested, 96% invested right now. We're top ranked in ETF management. Last I looked, we were number one out of 460 in Morningstar Advisor in the last 3 years. But our success in ETFs has been navigating the spreads. People don't realize that ETFs have spreads. And I'll just pick on SPY as an example. So last year, SPY, the biggest, most liquid ETF, went up 13.1% after market hours. But during market hours, it dropped 17.3%. So that's over 30% performance dispersion. So the problem is if you sell an ETF on a down day, you're going to get picked off. And like if you sold on Christmas Eve, you would probably lost 4 to 6% below the net asset value of the stocks. So ETF spreads have become like the new EKG for the...
Ah, I see. It's like a mutual fund. You can almost pick it off. My goodness. Trades is what I'm saying.
But what it is, it's we've had flash crashes in the past, and the ETF spreads get wide. But then in the fourth quarter, we had a coronary. So we basically decide to not play with ETFs until the spreads tighten. And they are tightening. They're getting better.
In a way, I mean, that's valuable proprietary information. Or is it more the tweaking of it and the management of it where the wealth is created?
Well, there's actually a pretty big conspiracy going on, if you don't mind me revealing on your show. Morningstar, when they discuss ETF spreads and discounts, premium, they call them premium discounts, does their math wrong. They do it at the end of the day close. And during market hours, it's just horrific. So Morningstar is misleading people. I had my own ETF with Oppenheimer. I shut it down in 2016 because the average premium was 137 to buy and 374 to sell. And you have those two together, that's 511. So, you know, excuse me, a premium of 137 to buy, a discount of 374 to sell. So that 5.11% that it would cost to get in and out of my ETF, if you bought and sold my ETF every month in 2016, you'd lose 60% a year just in spreads. So Wall Street, in fact, they're having the ETF conference right now in Hollywood, Florida, at the Diplomat Hotel. Wall Street has invented something called no transaction pricing, where they say, oh, you can buy and sell ETFs and not pay a commission. Do you know what that means? That means we're going to fleece you on the spreads, okay? And people have absolutely no idea how bad the ETF spreads are, okay? And so when we sell our ETF management, we just go walk. We tell people that we know how to trade them better than everybody else. In fact, a lot of times we do a step-out trade where we bypass the markets and go directly to the ETF firms to get better execution. You know, ETFs are like anything in life. Properly used, they're fine.
If I had come up with this thesis, I would certainly want to publish in some academic journals. Is that probably something at your career level? Because you've got at least one or two solid, you know, Harvard Business Journal level concepts here.
They're on Navalier.com. That's the management company's website. There's always a picture of Lake Tahoe there, so you know you're on the right side. In the lower right-hand corner, we have these white papers, and we've been warned about ETF spreads for some time, and we warned about the robo-advisors, the blind leading the blind. The SEC is starting to find the robo-advisors, mostly on suitability, you know, just talking to machines instead of people, doing the wrong thing. But we worry that as the machines take over Wall Street, they'll trip over themselves. And it's very disturbing. Now, our white papers are authored on ETFs, authored a lot by Jason Bonner. And Jason was a professional trader of ETFs at Cantor and Jefferies. And so he kind of knows the inside baseball more than most people. But we have lots of graphs and charts, and we try to expose it. But what we find is we're up against a big machine. You know, a lot of people don't want these little secrets out. Another example is when we got out of most people don't realize that a lot of ETF firms pay a kickback to the firms. So I'll just tell you an example. My son-in-law works for a very big prestigious firm, and he gives all his portfolios away for free because they don't realize he's getting 0.5% kickback from the ETFs he's buying. Okay, so my son-in-law will never invest with me because I don't pay a kickback, but he uses big, well-known ETFs to do that. Other ETFs, especially the smart beta ETFs, often have just a lot of money to throw around. In fact, they're the ones that are buying space firms like TD Ameritrade to basically push this no transaction ETF pricing. So when you buy the ETF at TD and the no transaction platform, the ETF firm's actually paying TD for it, paying for the order flow. So what's happened is when we got out of the market in October and hitting these treasury ETFs, you know, SHY and,
can they find papers you've referred to directly?
The last one was called RoboSharks, causing the fourth quarter correction, but, you can put that link up there. We had another thing about are you being fleeced in ETFs. We like to pick on the pod ETFs. In fact, I just did their Orlando Money show. I'm happy to report the pod ETFs disappeared this year, but they've been there in the years past. There's an ETF out there called MJ, Alternative Harvest. And in the past, people have had to pay up to a 30% premium to buy their pod stocks in this ETF. And so there's a joke on Wall Street, there's more money selling pod ETFs than there is pot because there's a 30% markup. So blockchain ETFs have been 15 to 18% markup from time to time. So what's happened is Wall Street is getting paid on the spread people don't pay attention to the spreads. The ETF industry is like anything in life. They got legit ETFs. I mean, I'll be honest with you, like Spiders doesn't pay a kickback. That's State Street. Vanguard doesn't pay a kickback, okay? But then there are all the ETFs that pay the kickback, or those Athene ETFs that have the big markups.
True, but those spreads, I mean, it's telegraphing Louis Navalier and Navalier and Associates some key information, wouldn't you agree? I mean, if it weren't for that under-the-table antics, it would be, you know, more difficult to decide what's happening. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, in fact, CNBC's reporting today. They're at the ETF conference, the race to zero, while ETFs are saving you money. That's all BS. And you know what's funny is they've taken an instrument which didn't normally have a spread and are shoving all their money through these things to get it. Now, one thing I should say about ETFs, spreads do tighten up at the end of the day. So if you look at them in the middle of the day, they're pretty wide. And then at the end of the day, they tighten up. So if somebody's buying and selling ETF, try to buy at or near the close. But see, a lot of these firms out there, especially the model managers, force their orders in the middle of the day when the spreads are wide. So that's the other conspiracy, okay, is that the firms are directing their orders on market only through these bad trading pipes just so they can pad everything. But the sectors are still mixed. And, you know, I gave you four or five of the top sectors this year. But different leadership this year, your best defense, strong offense. Now you want to have very good sales and earnings in this decelerating environment. And you want to be more domestic.
All right. That's must-hear information. Thank you, Louis Navalier.
Thank you.
The blockchain revolution is transforming the global arena, disrupting every industry in its path. GoldSeek.com is excited to introduce an off-the-chain opportunity in digital gold and silver from our friends at Atmex and Sprott.com. One Gold holds physical gold and silver metals at the Royal Canadian Mint, the first online marketplace to offer secure and convenient buying, selling, and redemption of digital precious metals. One Gold uses Vault Chain, a secure, immutable blockchain ledger developed by Tradewind Markets, the leading innovator in digital precious metals, distributed ledger, and blockchain technology. Vault Chain. Gold and silver are 100% redeemable through One Gold for physical precious metals delivered to customers' doors in any size at competitive prices and low transaction storage costs. As a special offer and for a limited time only, One Gold is offering gold and silver at spot price with no additional premiums. OneGold.com is secure and accessible 24/7 on any device, offering convenient purchases and sales of precious metals. Easy recurring transactions make passive saving and gold dollar cost averaging as easy as a single mouse click. Vault Chain offers the best tier pricing on AppMex products, setting the industry standard as a fully backed physical asset with easy redemption in coins, rounds, or bars, offering clients peace of mind and full transparency. Don't get left behind. Remember to bookmark OneGold.com for the safest and most convenient digital precious metals today. Remember, OneGold.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
GoldSeek.com Radio. I recently flew across country for a corporate speaking engagement with a longtime client and friend. One of the things that annoys me to no end in my travels is when the airline turns their flight attendants into purveyors of credit card debt just before the plane prepares to land. I marvel at the aggressive sales pitches the lead flight attendants are forced to read to a captive airborne audience, promising tens of thousands of airline miles just for signing up. Other airline perks are trotted out on display as the other flight attendants walk up and down the cabin aisle, fanning out the credit card applications, urging people to take one. Much like I ask people to pick a card when performing a sleight of hand or mind-reading illusion. The difference is, when I ask someone to pick a card, they know I'm going to fool them, and they have a good time in the process. When the flight attendants hustle debt to unsuspecting passengers, many of those passengers have no idea they are about to be fooled and taken advantage of, with high interest rates, hard inquiries on their credit reports to see if they qualify for that all-important airline credit card. And if they have too many hard inquiries, it can inhibit, in some cases, getting credit for a car or home, or provide a reason to charge more for other things, like insurance, that relies in part on credit scores to calculate your monthly premium. Then I see how many people are actually willing to write down their personal information on a paper application and give it to someone on an airplane. The risks to one's identity and credit security can be astronomical in such settings. Free stuff is a great incentive, and when responsibly used, is a great motivator. However, the implications of selling unnecessary consumer debt and the risks associated with that debt to your credit and your identity is not something to play around with. But a lot of people do. The money business can be very profitable. And with the frequency I see different airlines hustle for that extra business, it reminds me that credit card debt may in fact be more profitable for some flights than the airline ticket itself. The enticements and trappings of debt eventually disappear. Airline miles expire, so do points. Introductory APRs go away and are replaced with often usurious interest rates. All the stuff that looks like glitter isn't gold, and eventually dulls. And all that remains for many who partake in this process is revolving debt that they pay for time and time again. Traveling can be a fascinating endeavor because human nature can be a remarkable study. It never gets old. But when it comes to debt and borrowing resources from one's own future, the more things change, the more they stay the same. When this round of debt expansion can no longer be adequately serviced, and institutions once again tighten, I hope the sounds you hear as lenders reduce open credit lines, chase balances down, cross-collateralize more of your assets, among other things, I hope the sounds and screams you hear are not your own. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.